Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thank you, Dave Slade, and welcome to another Baseball America Podcast. Today, J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler are going to talk Dodgers. We're almost done with our 30-team review of all 30 teams' farm systems. We have the Dodgers, got the Giants, that'll finish us off. We have the top 100 is out now, so a lot of great stuff at baseballamerica.com. Before we get to that, though, we do want to remind you that Baseball America's podcast is brought to you by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% on your order. So, Ben, we are wrapping up here. Dodgers is the second to last team, and we're wrapping up with one of the best farm systems, I would say, in baseball. I think you would agree. The thing that stands out about this is you have the top-end talent, Cody Bellinger, but you also have some depth of significant talent, and that's logical. The Dodgers spend a lot of money on amateur talent acquisition. They've spent a ton of money internationally, and some of it ends up being basically burned. Let's just be honest about it.
A lot of it, yeah.
A lot of it, but the reality of it is it also does mean it pays off. If you look at this system as an overview, it is an organization that is successful at the big league level, but also has a lot of pieces, even after making some moves and all, to either help the big league club or to be used in trades.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned all the money they spend, and that certainly gets a lot of attention, and that did get them Yadier Alvarez, their top pitching prospect. Got them Yusniel Diaz, who is now their number six prospect. They trade away Jose De Leon, so he moves up one spot. But I think the majority of the talent that they have is not so much due to the money they've spent. It's really been good draft picks. I mean, Cody Bellinger was not...
he was a dude, but he wasn't a top-of-the-first-round pick or anything like that.
No, he's very, very much transformed himself. I mean, he's always been a very good defender and a good athlete at first base. The defense has always stood out, but he's a fourth-round pick. You know, he was supposed to be a bat over power type guy. Now he probably more power than bat, but it's really a combination of everything. I mean, he's an extremely well-rounded player for a first baseman. You don't really hear that talked about too much with first baseman, but you just go down the list. I mean, Alex Verdugo, Willie
Calhoun, fourth round pick.
You know, Brock Stewart. These guys were not. You know, even
the
guys who were first-round picks, even you go back to, like, Corey Seager, you know, these guys, they haven't had a top, like, 10 picks, I think, since Clayton Kershaw was the last time they had one. They've been really hitting on their draft picks.
And doing a good job of development, too.
Yeah, and doing that without having that luxury of, you know, usually when we have a team that's ranked really high in our farm system rankings, it's a combination of, you know, they had really high draft picks, and they've made a whole bunch of trades, whether it's the Cubs, you know, a couple of years ago, or the Royals when they were building their farm system up. The Rays did the same thing. The Braves right now, you know, combination of high draft picks and
acquiring every first-round pick that they can get their hands on.
Yeah, trades. So to me, that really is, you know, you look at where, you know, if you have the prospect handbook, you can see our farm system rankings. And a lot of the teams that are in that top 10 of our farm system rankings are teams that have been bad at the major league level and bad for a few years, have had high draft picks, have been trading for players. The Dodgers really stick out in that group because, like you said, they have a strong farm system, but they're also built to win right now at the major league level. They haven't just been piling up these high draft picks and trading for a bunch of guys from other clubs to boost their farm system. They've done a really good job and made some really astute picks in the draft, especially.
The other thing though that does stand out when you look at their lot in the prospect handbook, largest bonuses in club history. Most clubs, when you look at this, it's like there's a guy, you know, that top of the first round pick guy that they signed for $5 million or whatever. when you talk about with the Dodgers, and again, it is true, they've drafted very well. Hector Oliveira, 28 mil. Yadier Alvarez, 16 mil. Yusniel Diaz, 15.5. Yasiel Puig, 12. Alex Guerrero, 10. And we could, if you kept going beyond that.
Yeah, that's just signing bonus. I mean, Yaisel Sierra, Aryubaruena, who I'm sure the Dodgers never want to hear his name again,
mentioned,
doesn't even go on there just because we're only looking at signing bonuses. Pablo Millan Fernandez, who they gave $8 million to, who's just, you can find him in minor league free agency. A billion guys like him, they gave him $8 million for some reason.
So the point is this is an organization that's drafted very well, that does a good job of development, but also does have the ability to eat contracts that most organizations, it would basically crush development. Let's just be honest.
I think there's a lot of, there's certainly a lot of money that they spend that they have not gotten a good return on their investment. But they've drafted so well that they still have this.
Right. The reality of it is that,
farm system.
No, to me, when I look at the National League West, you've had two teams that have fought it out at the top for basically this decade. I mean, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, and the Padres have largely been absent from actually competing in the division for most of the decade. It's been the Dodgers and Giants. And let's just also be honest, if it wasn't for the fact that the Giants basically won the World Series, which is the point of what this is all about, but them winning the World Series in 12 and 14 means that they do have an upper hand on the Dodgers. When it comes to the regular season, the Dodgers have been the dominant force in this division for most of the decade. And when you look at it right now, I know that the Rockies have improved and the Rockies have a good farm system. The Giants are still in the contention and all that, and they have some depth, although their farm system's not at that same level. Padres are completely, entirely in a rebuild and are trying to build a very strong farm system. The Diamondbacks are a little bit earlier in their rebuild than the Padres are, with some very good core pieces. I still look at this and say, if you ask me to pick a team to be the dominant team in this division over the rest of the decade, it's the Dodgers. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely true. I like the Rockies' farm system. I'm not buying their overall plan. I don't think they have much of a direction, it seems, in terms of where they're going. The Diamondbacks, the Padres the Diamondbacks farm system is bad. They have a lot of different opportunities that they could,
if they did a total teardown, they have some pieces that would be incredibly valued out there.
I think.
But that said, that would be a.
And the Padres are going to be. Wow, I can't imagine how many people are going to be watching Padres games this year.
They
have a good farm system, but it's still not close.
They're the only team that I can think of in baseball right now that is in. Like, if you said right now, pick your favorite to be have the number one pick in not this year but next year's draft, it's the Padres with a bullet, because there's no other team out there. Usually we have three or four. This time last year, you know, the Braves and the Phillies and, well, the Twins weren't, but they ended up being. But there were a number of teams who were in the, wow, we're going to be terrible, but we're completely rebuilding. The only team that kind of feels like is at that phase in the rebuild right now at the big league level is the Padres. The Padres, when you are talking about, well, they might acquire Jared Weaver because they need innings. You know, that starting rotation right now, still, as spring training begins, their starting rotation, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for guys to earn jobs. They hope to find a Dan Straley or someone like that on waivers or something. But the reality of it is that they had Van Straten last year and they waived him. But, you know, but that is, they don't have a core yet at the big league level that you say that's what they're building around.
That's why, like you were saying, it's the Dodgers and the Giants. And if you look at how these teams are built out for the next few years, I do think the Giants are still going to be a competitive team a few years down the road. They have the pieces on the major league team, but certainly, I think you look at the combination of major league talent and what's coming up in the farm system. I mean, you look at you mentioned the depth that the Dodgers have, but at the same time, there's also guys who are ready to help. Their best prospects are in the upper levels. Obviously, Yadier Alvarez is still probably a couple or a few years away.
Right.
But, you know,
but Cody Bellinger,
Alex Verdugo, Willie Calhoun, these guys all played in double A or above. Andrew Tolles helped them already in 2016, last year. So there's a lot of guys there who can help them as quickly as this year, I think.
And they also have the pieces when they have a hole at the big league level. I mean, Jose De Leon, again, we talk about development. That was a 23rd round pick who they turned into one of the better pitching prospects in baseball. And that helps them, you know, basically go out there and get the second baseman that they needed. So this is something that they have done. Not all of these prospects are going to fit on this big league roster, in part because they are at the point where you have to be pretty special to break in, because they have the money to spend and they can go out there and get big league answers where you say, we're not going to go through the acclimation process, but they also can go out there again. They can use these pieces in trade. Cody Bellinger, though, feels like, I think to both of us, a guy who, much like, you know, I'm not saying he's Corey Seager because he's not, but much like Corey Seager, he's a cornerstone type guy that you at some point, and I don't know exactly where he fits in the short term, but he's a guy that you do build around, not you trade away.
Yeah, that's somebody who should be hitting in the middle of their lineup for a long time. There's no surprise why that was the player the Twins kept asking about in the
They're smart about that, yes.
trade talks, and I think everybody in baseball would love to have Cody Bellinger on their team. This guy he's a first baseman who's a well above average defender at that position.
I would say he's the best defensive first baseman in the minors.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that there may not be some 32-year-old at AAA that slipped my mind, but when you're talking about guys who are prospects, I don't think it's close.
There might be somebody who's at third base right now in the minor leagues who's a future first baseman who may end up being a better defensive first baseman down the road. But right now, Cody Bellinger, it's athleticism. He has good hands, actions, range. He gets good reads off the bat. He's a big target over at first base. Everything you really want to see defensively in a first baseman. I mean, we're talking about a first baseman who had a great year offensively, and we're talking about his defense.
I'll put it this way. When we talk to scouts, when it comes to first baseman, there's only two ways that a scout generally brings up their defense at first base. On one hand, you have Josh Bell and guys like that who they bring it up because they're like, I don't know. He's bad enough at it defensively that I can't confidently tell you that he'll be able to do it. And that's a pretty rare group. And then on the flip side, guys talk about their defense with Cody Bellinger because it's like, he's as good as you'll see. Like, he's a guy who could reach the big leagues if he's playing first base in the big leagues, I would expect him to be immediately one of the best defenders in the big leagues at first base. Now, admittedly, it's first base. This is not shortstop. But he's a guy, he'll play outfield first because they have Adrian Gonzalez. But he's a guy who is a legitimate outfielder. It's not a question of, can he play the outfield? He's played center. I mean, again, he's not a center fielder long term, but he's played center during his career. And scouts will talk about, no, but you want him at first base because he's that good defensively at first base.
Yeah, it sounds a little strange. You'd rather have somebody who has the value to play the outfield instead of go to first
base,
but he's so good at first base.
Do you want a 50 in the corners, or do you want a 70 at first?
I think the ability to play the outfield, I mean, he's a legitimately average runner, which you don't see from many first basemen. And so he does have the ability to go out, maybe even play center field, like you said, in a pinch, more comfortably. You put him in a corner outfield spot. I think that's probably the way he at least transitions.
Right, he has to. Adrian Gonzalez is signed for, I mean, he's still locked up this year and next year.
Yeah, so that's the way he's, you know, we'll see what happens in 2018, but certainly in 2017, I think Bellinger is probably going to force the issue at some point, maybe by mid-season, and that ability, that versatility to play the outfield is, I think, the way he's going to enter the lineup. But I do think long-term he probably holds down first base for them for a long time. And, oh, yeah, we've only talked about his defense. By the way, this is a guy who was 21 years old last year in Double-A, has just coming off an outstanding season there. guy who understands the strike zone. He's always been a good hitter. He keeps trimming his strikeout rate every year after he's made some mechanical adjustments. He's got 25, 30 plus, maybe even home run power.
56 home runs the last 2 years. Some of that was in Rancho, but the Texas League was not an offensive league last year as much as everyone thinks.
Being one of the youngest hitters in that league, it's like I was saying before, it's you don't really find many first basemen where you say everything he does is average to, you know, is like a 50 to a 70 tool. On the 20/80 scale,
on our grading of him, there literally is not a below average tool, and the only average tool is his speed. Everything else is plus or better.
Yeah, he does so many different things to help you, create runs, prevent runs. We always want to look at the reward or the upside. We're also looking at the risk factors and the weaknesses, trying to poke holes in these guys, what go wrong. There's not too many holes in this guy's game.
One of the prettiest swings you'll ever see either.
We have, we don't put too many first base prospects into our top 10 historically. I mean, Eric Hosmer was in there. I mean, that's obviously...
And I think it's a comparison. The thing about it is that, and I think he has a chance to be a significantly better version of Hosmer.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of like a somewhere in between Hosmer and Anthony Rizzo. I mean, two guys who have, pure hitting skills, power, and good
and defense.
At first base with, big frames from the left side. Probably maybe a little bit more physically similar to Hosmer, but I think in terms of the production that I'm expecting from Bellinger, it's going to be somewhere in between those two guys, which is a star.
And then Yadier Alvarez, number two on this list. Obviously, Ben, Alvarez has had a very interesting path to being what is now one of the better pitching prospects in the game, because he's a little bit of a late bloomer, is he not?
Oh, completely. When he was in Cuba, he was not really any. He couldn't even make their junior national team, which is, you have to be good to.
But especially pitching, especially on the pitching side.
Yeah, pitching side especially. They had, like, that 1800 team that year had, Cionel Perez was on that team, Ronald Bolaños, who signed with the Padres, was on that team. They had some other guys on that team who were okay arms, but not great. Granted, Cuba's not going to show, they're putting players on that team who they think have the best chance to win the tournament, not necessarily the best future projection.
Right.
But Yadier Alvarez pitched in their 18 and under league that year and walked more than a batter per inning. I mean, this guy was pretty much almost out of nowhere. He had never pitched outside of Cuba. Nobody had ever seen him pitch outside of Cuba. He never pitched in Serie Nacional. And then he popped up in the Dominican Republic and was throwing, mid-90s. Then it was upper 90s and a pretty loose, easy, minimal effort delivery. He was wild. I saw him at one of his first showcases there, and he had trouble throwing strikes, but you could see the easiness to the way his mechanics worked, to the way he threw the ball, the velocity. You hear a lot, you look at a guy and see, and you think he's probably throwing maybe 90, 91, 92, and you look at the radar gun, and it's 96, 97. That's Yadier Alvarez.
Now he's touched triple digits.
Yeah, now his velocity has continued to improve, and his control has come a long ways. He's made some mechanical adjustments to help repeat his delivery with more frequency, and he misses a ton of bats. The curveball that he throws is plus. He throws a changeup that I think he's. The changeup isn't even really a pitch that they have. You see a lot of in Cuba, a lot of those pitchers tend to throw a splitter, so that's a pitch he's still learning. But that has a potential to be another above average pitch.
And again,
for him once he throws
a scout, told this to us, not that long ago. Think about it is that if you're throwing 100, which he will do, and locating at times 100, the changeup out of the hand, if you just can repeat your delivery, if you can just don't slow your arm down at all, it's going to be an effective pitch almost from the start.
Yeah, and now there's an extreme level still of risk with Yadier Alvarez. We haven't seen him throw more than 60 innings ever in his life.
He's not worth deep in games because he's never needed to.
No, and he's the Dodgers have managed him extremely carefully, and this is not a 16-year-old kid. This is somebody who turns 21 next month. I mean, if you had a 21-year-old college junior who you were drafting and he had never thrown more than 60 innings.
We call him Michael Machuella.
Yeah, I mean, Alvarez hasn't had the extensive injury history
right.
that Machuella or other pitchers who,
right, but that
who
is...
don't throw innings like that. But it is you just don't know how it's a thinner frame guy. How is he going to handle having 150 to 200 innings?
Right. Can he do that, or is he going to be
what
something?
What is he going to do, this season? I mean, you can't, he's not going to throw 150 innings
no.
this season. The Dodgers are not going to ramp him up from 60 innings to, maybe he might throw double that amount of innings this year. But even then, we have to wait and see. He is overpowering hitters just on the pure stuff, and the strike throwing ability is better, but still the command needs to improve. There's an extremely high ceiling. I don't think there's many pitchers in the minor leagues who can match Yadier Alvarez on pure stuff. It's an exciting, extremely high reward pitcher who I don't throw this around much, but there's a number one starter potential mm-hmm. here, but there is still a lot of risk involved.
A lot, yeah. Now, another one that's interesting is top 10, Willie Calhoun, number 5 on this list. We have some differences of how we see Calhoun, but I think here's where we start with. We start with, we both agree, Willie Calhoun can really hit.
Yes.
I mean, he's hit. He hit when he was in junior college ball. He's hit at every level in pro ball. He is a short it's a short left-handed hitter with legit power in there. I mean, he drives the ball very well. As a hitter, what do you see him kind of ended up being?
I think he has a chance to be one of the better hitters in the game. I just love the way his swing works. You mentioned he's short.
Which is not a disadvantage. That's an advantage for him.
Yeah, it's a small strike zone. He manages that strike zone very well. He's able to decipher a strike from a ball. He swings at good pitches, and the plate coverage is outstanding because he has very good hand-eye coordination. It's a very short, efficient, simple swing that stays through the hitting zone for a long time. Even if he's late on a pitch, he's still probably going to make contact, and because of the power he has, if it's going to the opposite field, he's going to drive the ball to the opposite field, and he has power. This is a guy who was hit and hit for power throughout his career, like you said, going back to his college days. And keep in mind, the Dodgers drafted this guy in the fourth round in 2015 and sent him to Double-A last year. That's just an organizational philosophy right now of the Dodgers, is they're going to push all their top prospects very aggressively. You saw with Bellinger, Verdugo, Yusniel Diaz, Omar Estevez, they signed out of Cuba.
Brock Stewart, basically. I mean, he never really unpacked last year. It was Rancho. It was Tulsa. It was Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Hey, you're in the big leagues.
You put out the list of the youngest players at each level of the minor leagues every year, and it's just filled with Dodgers, partly because the Dodgers have a lot of good prospects, but partly because the Dodgers push their prospects. And I think if you take all of that context into consideration, and consider what Willie Calhoun did last year, but it was an outstanding pro debut offensively. This guy hits for power. He doesn't swing and miss much. He controls the strike zone. He does so many things. He checks off so many boxes that I want to see as a hitter. And now we can talk about his defense.
And that's where my concern is.
Where everybody's concern is. And I think it probably depends on the magnitude of that concern.
Okay, let's start with, as a second baseman, if you're being charitable right now,
we are charitable.
Being charitable, he's below average to well below average.
I think well below average.
I'd say another way you could term it right now is currently it is unplayable. You could not put him in the big leagues at second base right now and feel like that your major league manager is not at some point going to go to the general manager and say, we can't do this.
Right.
He has to get better. Hands, range, really, I hate to say it, but all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, we're like, sometimes it's, all right, well, he doesn't have, you know, we talk about somebody else, we'll say, well, they don't have great range. It's not going to make the flashy play. Well, he'll make the routine plays. With Willie Calhoun, he's got to learn to still just make the routine plays at second base.
Right. He doesn't make the flashy plays. He doesn't make the routine plays. And there are some concerns about whether he can do that. I mean, there is a lot of work between where he is now and him ever being a big league second baseman, because the building blocks are fringy there too. I mean, it's not something, kind of what you're saying.
That is a concern. It's not, you know, Yoel Moncada, for example, is not, he's not a poly, he has work to do, whether he's going to play second base or third base, either position, he's got work to do defensively. But you see with him, I mean, you can't miss the athleticism. You can't miss the well above average arm strength that he has.
You will see a great play from him that tells you, you know what, with refinement, he could be really good here.
Yeah, with experience, learning to slow the game down. Whereas with Willie Calhoun, it's now, you know, the hands.
You're hoping for him to be a 40 over there.
Yeah, even maybe a touch below that.
I kind of look at 40 at second base.
You just want him to get to playable or adequate at second base, which there certainly is a high risk that he ends up moving off.
Okay,
position.
So then once you get to that, let's start with the logical. If he was 6'1", I would say, because the bat is good enough, you would say this guy will end up at first base, and he'll be potentially playable at first base, and everything will be fine.
Right.
But we actually did this. We actually went and ran a BREF play index of show me every big league first baseman who's 5'8" in the history of the game. And you pretty much have to go back to the pre-dead ball era, basically the time when 5'8" made you, oh, he's a slightly above average, height. There are no 5'8" first basemen. You're just too small a target. No one ever does that. It's like it's more rare than finding a left-handed throwing catcher. So then you say, okay, and it's third base, the arm, that's third base is out. So it's left field, right? That's the other option. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's probably second base, left field, DH. That's one of the risks with second base prospects, and that's the big risk with Willie Calhoun. I think he could handle left field. He's not fast, but left fielders in general are you're seeing more guys who have speed in left field, but I don't think you need to be a Brett Gardner type to play left field. I think he could be adequate defensively in left field, probably below average defensively, but I think you could put him out there, and I just love the bat so much that I still think he'd be valuable out there. To me, the question of whether he can stay at second base is, I think you look at it as, like you said, there certainly is a lot of risk, and it's the thing that gives me some, I don't even say optimism, but at least some hope that he can stay at second base is just keeping in mind that this was his first year in professional baseball, and John Manuel's written about it before, that professional baseball is the best way, the best system for players to get better defensively. You just have more time, more opportunities.
Yep.
You can have a coach go out and hit you, 300 fungos every day at second base. And this is somebody who is, like Willie Calhoun, just turned 22 years old. He was 21 years old all of last season. I think there's still time. This is not somebody who's, 24, 25, where you're, this is pretty much is what it is at this point defensively. I think there's still time for him to improve defensively. It's almost like his bat, if he was in maybe like low A or high A this year, we'd say, all right, well, maybe there's more time, we have more patience with him to develop defensively. His bat is so good, he's going to be in AAA this year and pushing on the door offensively.
And it's almost like a catcher. When we talk about catchers sometimes, it's that kind of level where the bat is going to be ready so much before the glove is, that you're going to have to at some point say, yes, you're just going to continue dominating AAA as a hitter, but you got to stay there because we're working on this.
Yeah, so and we've seen other, look, Rafael Devers this year transformed himself. He was a guy who there was some, maybe some risk. He might even move over to first base coming to the year. I mean, he seemed like an okay defender at third base, playable over there. All the reports we got on him this year were, wow, this guy is an above average defender at third base pretty consistently. I was very surprised by that. I don't think Willie Calhoun is ever going to be somebody like that where we say, oh, Willie Calhoun is an above average defender. But I do think there is a chance that he can improve defensively enough to become an adequate defensive second baseman. And if he's an adequate defensive second baseman, I think the bat is an impact bat to become, you know, a 3-4 win type player overall, even giving back
some runs on defense
in the field. Now it's there's still risk in there, which is why he's, you know, I like him higher than where we have ranked. You might even, I want to speak for you, may, where you like him, but we have, we're ranked in the 90s, I think,
right,
in our top 100. So I'm probably the high man on Willie Calhoun, just because I do believe in his bat so much.
I will give one piece of optimism for him like that. When I think of scouting stories from my past, one that does jump out is his JUCO second baseman that I saw many years ago. When Marcus Giles, I was covering the Macon Braves, 1998, I think it was, and Marcus Giles was the second baseman that year for them. And he was, at that time, legitimately, and I think he would say, he was a 20 defender at second base. He was brutal, and he was brutal in almost every way you could be brutal. I mean, he just was not, he didn't have range, his hands weren't good, there really wasn't much of anything. To his credit, Glenn Hubbard, former big league second baseman, was a coach there that year, and it's not fun, but in Macon, Georgia, where it was, you know, probably 90 degrees with 100% humidity, they showed up most every day, 1 o'clock, ground balls, ground balls, ground balls. And Marcus Giles turned himself into, again, bat first second baseman. But at his, I mean, he was a big league second baseman.
For
multiple years, because he improved his defense to the point where it was playable considering how good the bat was. That's what you're talking about, Willie Calhoun. The concern I have with Calhoun, like you said, it's really a risk concern, because I've talked to scouts who aren't sold that left field's even an option, because we're talking about really like a, I mean, you can get, it's a, it's not a, if you want to go half grades, it's a 35 runner. You know, he's not a 40 runner. Not, you know, you probably is a little bit better than a 30 runner. But, the, you know, again, it's projecting a position he hasn't really played that much. But it's like, I don't know how well he can handle that, because there's not a whole lot of speed there either. But the bat is pretty special. I mean, the bat is very impressive. He's going to be a fascinating one to watch going forward. There's a lot of fascinating guys in this. Now, for him also, I mean, second base is probably not an option for a little while now that they've made, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers, I don't think there's any surprise. The Dodgers internally concur that Willie Calhoun is not ready defensively.
Right.
You can't put him at the major league level right now. That's why there was in so many offseason trade talks, why they traded for
Logan Forsythe. So. The thing about this is this system's good because I really like their draft.
Yeah.
Before we get to the draft, I know that you have always been an Austin Barnes believer. So I want to give you kind of give the short synopsis of what you think Austin Barnes is going to be.
I think, well, what he's going to become, I probably just depends on the opportunity he's given. I think in a lot of other organizations, he would be the starting catcher. He could be a starting catcher for a lot of teams. The problem is that he was the Marlins drafted him ninth round, 2011, and they kind of brought him along pretty slowly, or at least kind of a...
Yeah, 2011 Arizona State. So we're talking about a college guy from an 11 draft.
Yeah. He's taken a while to, 27 years old and a prospect. We usually don't put that together unless it's a Cuban player coming over. Usually think of 27
right.
years old as, all right, you're probably in your peak major league years.
I will throw a crazy Rule 5 thing, which he's only been eligible for the Rule 5 draft for 2 years. because he's a college draftee, whereas if he'd have been a signed out of Latin America, he'd have been eligible literally like 6 year, like at age 21,
yeah,
compared to 26.
Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers have him, and they have Grant Dayton, who's also 29 years old, two older, technically still prospects, who I like quite a bit. But I think Barnes, he just really needs an opportunity. Obviously, he wasn't getting that last year, and then this year he'll, they cleared some space for him trading last year. I mean, AJ Ellis and now Carlos Ruiz is gone, so they want an opportunity for him to play. This guy has pretty simple swing. He controls the strike zone. You see throughout his minor league career, he doesn't swing and miss much. It's a high on-base percentage. Not a ton of power, maybe 8 to 12 type home run guy with a bunch of doubles. His value is offensively is driven by his on-base percentage, but it's also a very good defensive package. He receives extremely well. Talked to teams that have pitch framing metrics on him in the minor leagues, and he grades out extremely highly in that category, something obviously a lot of teams are looking at these days. So I think that's certainly something that you want to have in somebody who's a backup who also has some versatility to maybe fill in at times at second base or even third base. So I think if he had the opportunity to be a you don't have an everyday catcher, but be a regular catcher, this guy could be a league average, maybe even better catcher. I don't think it's somebody who, if you look at some of these other guys who are 20, 21, 22 years old who might have more overall impact in their careers just because they're going to have more opportunity
5 years,
to do it. But I think Barnes is going to be probably one of the best backup catchers in the league this year. And if he was on a lot of other teams, I think he'd have a much larger role than he's going to have with the Dodgers.
So I did want to ask you also, this draft, Gavin Lux, Dustin May, Jordan Sheffield, that's a pretty deep draft as far as, bringing in some high ceiling talent. But who is, if there was one other guy that really jumps out to you, and Will Smith was in this draft, class two, but, and Mitchell White, good draft class. I really like their draft class. But who is a guy that we haven't talked about who's kind of Austin Barnes, I know is one of you, I want to bring him up because I know he's one of your guys. But who's someone that really stands out to you as the guy who you really think has a chance to be something?
Yeah, all those guys. I mean, DJ Peters, too, was another really interesting draft pick they got a little bit later on. Jordan Sheffield, Dustin May. To me, the guy that excites me the most is Dustin May, just in terms of there's still a lot of projection that you're doing and kind of long-term, almost wishful thinking, maybe in some respects. But if everything comes together for him, I think he's going to be a top 100 prospect for us soon, and maybe somebody who ranks highly on that list. This is somebody who's 6'6", long arms, skinny body, a ton of physical projection, touching 94 right now with movement, and usually, and we've talked a lot, you guys were talking on the Top 100 show on MLB Network about Lucas Giolito, Tyler Glasnow, how, when you're 6'6 plus, it's tough to have the body control to keep all those long levers in sync and be able to maintain your delivery and throw strikes. And that's one of the things that I like about Dustin
Four
May
walks and 30 innings in the AZL. Four.
As an 18-year-old, kid out of high school, and to get this guy in the third round, and not only is he, a big physical guy who, has probably an average fastball right now, I think he's going to grow into, a lot more velocity potentially, or he certainly has the potential to do that. But he also has, good movement on that pitch, and he... I think the separator too is that slider is a swing and miss slider. So you have somebody who has the potential to have, mid rotation stuff at least, and has good control of that stuff too, especially considering his age and for how long and lanky he is. That's the guy who I think if everything clicks for him, could be really exciting.
Brock Stewart's the guy. He's in the top 10, so I'm not going to talk about him, but he's a guy I really am impressed with the development and the improvement he's made. Another guy, though, who's Trevor Oakes, 14th at the time we did the handbook. He'd be 13th now because of the trade of De Leon. But Oakes, Cal Baptist, which has had a run of pitching prospects, but a seventh rounder in 2014, whose stuff has gotten better as a pro. Again, credit to him, credit to the Dodgers as far as development, that his stuff has gotten better pitching on a on 5-day schedule instead of a 7. That's not always easy to do. But really locates, again, he's more to me kind of a back end kind of guy, but should get some ground balls. And you want to talk about a strike thrower. Again, he was on the Brock Stewart plan, Rancho, Tulsa, Oklahoma City last year. And overall for the year, it was a grand total of 21 walks in basically almost 150 innings.
Yeah, I mean, that's his game. Throw strikes with a plus sinker. It's got good combination of velocity and an extremely heavy life on it. It's sinkers, cutters, throw it over the plate. Not going to miss a ton of bats. He doesn't have the secondary pitches to do that, but he's a heavy, prolific ground ball pitcher. And, like you said, if you can throw strikes, keep the ball on the ground, whether it's back of the rotation or maybe a reliever, depending on what the Dodgers need this year or going forward, I don't think it's a high ceiling guy, but I think that is somebody who can be a productive big leaguer.
The thing that stands out to me about this is even after trading De Leon, even after graduating Julio Urias, who is, front of the rotation guy basically almost from day one, even after trading away Jarrell Cotton, after trading away Grant Holmes, again, significant prospects, this is still an organization I look at, and they needed it last year. But if you need Brock Stewart, if he doesn't slot in your top 5, but you need him at some point in the year, you can feel comfortable about calling on him.
And they will.
And they will. If you need Trevor Oakes to give you some innings at some point, you can feel comfortable about that. And that's the guys, we're talking about the guys at the upper levels, and then beyond that. Like, I do think that their high A rotations, probably going to be their high A rotation this year, could be exceptional.
Yeah, the X factor here is Walker Buehler, right, too, who, if you just look at the pure stuff, it's probably Yadier Alvarez, number one, and then Buehler is number two in the system. Because everything that's happened last year was a positive for Buehler. Mm-hmm. He, had missed pretty much the entire season, having Tommy John surgery. We knew that was going to happen, but you never know. We think Tommy John surgery.
How's this stuff going to come back?
Yeah, sometimes it's Tommy John surgery. It's a routine procedure. It'll come back fine. No, that's not how it always happens. But in Buehler's case, the stuff is just as good, if not even better, which doesn't mean that Tommy John surgery made him better. It means that he got maybe stronger and mm-hmm. worked in the offense.
And also that maybe he was pitching even before with some...
Right, his stuff may have just been...
on a steady deterioration because of the structural integrity of the ligament.
Right, so that's everything was encouraging. Now, at the same time, I think the Dodgers are internally certainly are extremely high on him, and I know there are some scouts who saw him and saw the glimpses of him pitching last season in extremely short stints that were extremely excited too. I can see certainly the upside that is there, but still, the fact that he has already had Tommy John surgery, he's kind of a frail or framed type guy, and he just doesn't have a track record of holding innings. And if you want to be any kind of a starting pitcher,
right, there are durability issues he
has to be a consideration. So, certainly by this time next year, he could be a lot higher on this list. It's kind of a highly volatile type of prospect is probably the best way I could put it, where there's certainly a lot of excitement and high reward potential, but that durability issues, it's easy to... The durability issues certainly for me are a risk factor for him. And it's I think sometimes it's easy to go out and say, oh, he's throwing a couple innings now, and you see the stuff, and easy to get excited and get overexcited based on what you can see right in front of your face, right there on the mound, and then kind of forget and or almost overlook the risk that is not so evident when you're just watching him throwing, you know, 98 miles an hour coming back from Tommy John surgery. So a lot of high reward potential there, but certainly a lot of risk as well.
I look at it, so that high A rotation, Buehler should be in it. We're also looking at Jordan Sheffield in it, Mitchell White in it, Denis Santana, converted shortstop, who I kind of like as a, I mean, that's a deep, deep sleeper kind of guy.
Yeah, Abdullah could be there.
It's, I mean,
yeah. And then it's the Dodgers, so they might push some of these guys to double play. We don't know. So,
but yeah, but I mean, this is, again, the thing that stands out is this is depth. This is depth of arms in an organization that also is spending money at the big league level. It's a great combination to have. If you're a Dodgers fan right now, again, you want a little bit more success in the playoffs, let's just be completely honest, but the reality of it is that you look at this and you say, man, this is an organization that's built to win now and built to continue winning.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, well, that was a good solid 45 minutes of Dodgers talk, or as we come almost to, we have one more to do, we'll knock out Giants, and we'll have knocked out all 30 organizations, talking about their farm systems as we kind of put a bow on the prospect season for 2016-17 offseason. Now that spring training started, we'll have a top 100 podcast, which will be really fun. Probably I don't even know how long we'll go on that, because that could be a lot of fun. But we do want to remind you again that our podcast is brought to you and sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. So for Ben Badler, I'm JJ Cooper. Thanks for the download, and so long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.